And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's December, Andy. The test matches still haven't started in the cricket, but I feel like the new football season's already starting to bud.
It is. Although technically it is November, Nick, but...
Sorry. Strong, getting there.
Strong start to the pod, but in fairness, you've been so buried in draft research, you've probably forgotten what day of the week it is.
It got a bit awkward taking my children to the wrong school this week.
And forcing them to do agility tests and 20-meter time trials and then rating them. There's only two. It's not a very exciting draft, but you know you can. There's always a late slider here.
Why am I number two in your mock draft, Eddie?
I can't believe they're available this pick. Anyway, so yes, the lads are back at training. Always very exciting to see Nank glistening with sweat, looking $1 million as most players do, because they never look better after 3 months off, not having to do as much hard running and been lifting weights. So they look amazing. And do you have it is that time of year. I feel like the trees are growing, the flowers, the pollen level in Melbourne is ridiculously high, and it's time for someone to start testing the structural foundations of Punt Road. And do you have an early technique?
Well, and we'll be talking about those structural foundations later on. But I think for the internet, clearly the early best on ground was Robbie Tarrant, as he and his swollen biceps ran laps around Punt Road Oval.
He's got the vein in the bicep showing, which is something bodybuilders really go after. So he and Tarrant certainly follows in the fine Richmond tradition of ridiculously handsome key position players.
Yeah, definitely. So, in terms of actually looking good, playing football from the track watchers, there's a bit of Riley Collie Dawkins love that he's. You know, one of the big things for him coming into the league was improving his endurance base, and there's some signs of progress there, which is encouraging.
And that is very exciting and highly relevant too when we start to talk about the draft, because we're certainly relying on one or both of him and Dow really stepping up next year.
And that's true. Samson Ryan, unfortunately, hasn't come back at 105 kilos, but still showing some nice skills.
And that's promising, because we're not that far away from needing him in round
no.
one.
No, definitely not. But yeah, as you mentioned, Andy, the big event of the week, obviously the AFL draft. We had 5 top 30 picks, which was our strongest draft hand since 2004. Obviously, the results from that 2004 draft, which were the good, the bad, and the overshadowed. And while the draft has got a lot more professional since then, just with the COVID of it all, I think there was some uncertainty about the draft, although I think it was pretty predictable at the time.
Yeah, I've been sort of reflecting about how we watched it and how we felt about it, and certainly it went to par very early. As you'd expect, the most well-known guys, they're discussed by everyone, so that the sort of... The wisdom of the markets and the consensus was pretty much bang on.
Well, and the chatter from the agents as well.
Yes. it all feeds into the beautiful melange of pre-draft information. But it is funny the way we're following it. It is sort of, and to your credit, Nick, you said before the draft to me that your ideal outcome was Gibkus and Johnson, the Western Australian kid, as our first two picks. And it didn't quite work out like that, but it was certainly on the board. And I couldn't help but feel while we're reacting to these picks, we're so reacting to our prior beliefs on based on very incomplete information. You know, I was fist pumping yes when we got Sonzi and sort of slightly bemused by one or two other picks, which I've since talked myself into, as because that's what fans do. But it's all just reacting to our very meager prior beliefs based on very incomplete information versus the recruiters. And it really makes you think about the perception of sliders and risers. So I have done a bit of research into sliders and risers in the NFL.
Looking forward to this, yeah.
So the NFL is good comparison to the AFL, and you've got roughly about the same amount of starting players, and they're fairly interchangeable. There's position specificity, and there is a bit of game plan bias that some players fit certain systems better. There is you've got to remove quarterbacks from this discussion because there's no equivalent to a quarterback in AFL. So if you actually look at it, so people have to go on historically and look through draft steals, i.e. players that were drafted later than their consensus draft position. And in our case, in this year's draft, that would be Hobbs or Sonzi, which we're going to talk about in loving detail in a second. And also draft risers and, you know, surprise early picks, which I guess in our case would probably be the Tasmanian kid. So, and whether the correlation between the kids who are in either steals or surprise picks, whether they are better or worse than average picks at those positions. And guess what, Nick?
What?
Oh, I lost you there.
Sorry, I was on mute.
That's right. Anyway, so it turns out that there is a very, very small, if the steals, there's a very, very small correlation with them being slightly better than the average player at that position. But the relationship is so weak, it's barely worth talking about.
And so the draft order is the draft order.
Yeah, and funnily enough, and this is the NFL where the players get more, they're drafted at 21, 22, they play more high-profile games, they have more games on tape, they're not COVID-interrupted. So the gap between the insider's information and the outsider's information is less than it is in the AFL. So what I'm saying here is as much as we emotively react to the, oh, damn, I wish we got him because he seemed like he should have been a higher pick, or, oh, yes, we got him and he could have gone much earlier, it probably doesn't. It's probably not nearly as important as we think, and it probably the best way as a fan to look at it is these guys have way more information making these decisions than us, and let's just see. Now that we've got them, let's analyze them and see what they might contribute to the team in the next couple of years, and not the rating of drafts. Look, it's not. Draft experts hate doing it. They do it because it gets clicks. But, you know, I know we got an A plus in one and a D in another. I wouldn't worry too much about either of those scores. People are just doing it for clicks, and it's impossible to really know how well you've done in a draft in 3 years' time.
Yeah, and the other point of you can't tell how it's going to point being draft picks rarely help you win. You look at, particularly in the finals, you look at the teams in the finals this year and in recent years, it's extremely rare for 18-year-olds to come in and help you win unless you're a South Australian man child. It is crucial though for building the future of the team. The easiest way to get star players is to draft them. It's pretty rare, the star level free agents, and when they do move clubs, they want to move to a team that already has a good infrastructure. So, you know, a weird lesson from the mid ones, if that's what we're calling the decade drafts, from Richmond, is we had a pretty patchy record there for a while. We drafted Ben Lennon and Corey Ellis with back-to-back first-round draft picks. We traded 2 second-round picks for Chris Yaron. Like, we did a bunch of stuff wrong. But there was a big shift, noticeably starting in 2014. It was clear there was a real emphasis on bringing more speed, athleticism, running power into a team that had got pretty plodding. And I think there's some of that in our picks as well.
Totally. That was a point I was going to bring up. If you just sort of look at the meta narrative, and Michael Gleason wrote a pretty good piece on this on The Age, I thought.
Yeah, it was good.
And, so we don't draft for need on an individual positional basis. Not overwhelmingly anyway, but we sort of did draft for an overall team priority need. And Gleason's thesis, which you can see, is that we drafted for a little bit for back half intercepting, rebounding, and good kicking. That's a very strong theme. Not universally, but it's a strong theme in our draft.
Yeah.
But also it's also a continuation of exactly what you just said, is Richmond loves good runners.
Yeah. Well, and for our first two picks, we got close to the two best intercept players in the draft. Josh Gibkiss at number 9, and look, all the chatter was it was between him or one of the top midfielders, but yeah, we went with Gibkiss, and frankly, it's easy to see why. Like, he's 196 centimeters. He looks skinny at 87 kilos. Like, I think he's not going to have any trouble putting on weight to get to about 95 kilos in a couple of years. And actually, he's got very similar dimensions to Alex Rance when he was drafted, slightly taller. I looked at Noel Bolter, Alex Rance, Dave Asprey. Yeah, you know, and the minimum amount of weight those guys put on after being drafted was 7 kilos. In the case of Dave Asprey, it was 16 kilos. Like, so yeah, he's got a big frame, long arms, big hands. He's going to be a large lump of lead. And he's extremely explosive vertical athlete. His running vertical jump is higher than any Richmond player since, unfortunately, David Gordis.
It was funny. I was going to bring up Gordis in a second. I was going to have the worst case scenario comparison of every one of our draft picks, just to put a bit of. But the thing about, the running jump, which famously that it might have been even higher if he hadn't exceeded the measurement thing on the jump test. The other thing about it is he can use it in practice, because not everyone can use that athleticism. Mm. As you pointed out in the preview show, he's taken multiple hangers. But, you know, you just need to watch his highlights, is that he jumps high and he high points the ball, which is a skill independent of being able to jump well, and he has that natural ability, as evidenced by his intercept. You can't intercept a ball a lot unless you're a good reader of the ball in flight, and he has that. But Nick, the question... No, sorry.
Well, and he also has his both the one-on-one skill, but he also that backs it. Like, he comes across pretty confident both on and off the field, including in having the confidence to
just
break off his man and either to spoil or take a hanger on somebody's head. Like, I think if you had to ask him, the single thing he enjoys most on the football team would be taking hangers on people.
Well, you know, I wouldn't know because it does look like
probably not Robinson Crusoe in that one, but there's a determination to do it.
But I imagine anyone who can do it would enjoy it. It looks like a lot of fun to take a hanger. Nick, here's a question for you that I've been thinking about a lot, and I want your take on. So first of all, Nick, I love saying how if you could play forward, you would have played forward. If you're a backman, you're a backman. He did play forwards in his sort of early junior days, the sort of forward ruck combination that every great tall plays till he finds a position. And he did have, you know, because his seasons were shortened, they had less time to experiment with him. And, you know, perhaps in a shortened season, what the coaches naturally do is you highlight the, because you're basically trying to develop their one wood to get them drafted. So it's understandably that you play him in the back line. But is, and I know he has been described as looking lost forward sometimes by some draft observation. What do you think, the sort of a little bit of talk about him potentially being a Norton style both ends of the ground player, is there any chance you think?
You know that I have strong views that if there's genuine doubt on where they play, they're a backman. Being a forward is hard and requires different skills. I think perfectly fine to give it a go, but you know, Dave Asprey started life as a forward mid 2010. Alex Rance was playing centre half forward for Coburg. Like, you know, you try these things out and see if people can develop skills, but I think it's highly likely he ends up as a really good key back for a long time, and that's great.
Yeah, I think you're right. And look, I must admit, it's a little bit just the most lizard brain fan part of me is that, you know, what's more exciting than having a good young key position player? So forward. So I was trying to talk myself into that.
That's true. We are in desperate need of it, but you know you.
But yeah, but I'm 98% sure that you're right. I'm holding out that 2% tiny bit of hope that that the shortened seasons has meant that he hasn't been able to explore that side of his game. But I think it's irrational exuberance rather than logic. And he's come to the perfect situation where there's no one in front of him in the pecking order. Once he's developed a bit, but he's sort of got a sophomore year at school where in college football they call it a redshirt year where you can train but not play, and that's what he'll have. He'll probably tear up the VFL as an intercept marker. He'll get lots of opportunities to develop his game, but not be pushed in too early, barring a run of injury. So he's in a great spot. He's come to a great club for him. And, you know, we've obviously had a fantastic tradition of developing key backs. So, yeah, it'll be really exciting.
Our next pick wasn't my first choice for this pick. As we talked on the preview, I liked Darcy Wilmont, who went one pick before our pick 17. Also liked Matt Johnson, but Tom Brown has a lot to like as a footballer. Also has his one wood again, like Gibkiss, very good athlete. You know, he's 186 centimeters, so he's more mid size, but he's very good overhead, so he can play tall, he can play small. Like, what I like with both Gibkiss and Brown is that, you know, they're big enough but also athletic enough that if teams try to play short on them, it's not going to be a situation where we've got Dave Asprey on the bench because he's got no one to play against. Like, with these guys, you just play them on the shorter guy and they get dominated in one-on-one situations. Like, it's, yeah, and that athleticism just gives you a lot more options. Just very composed, reads the play well, disposes of it nicely. Like, yeah, I liked it as a pick.
So he's, as you say, the athleticism, the standing jump testing and the sprint testing was basically elite. I'm not exactly sure of the technical definition, but
he's under 3 seconds for 20 metres, which is quick.
And he was second best and well under 3 seconds, actually. I think it was 2.93. And So, like Gibkiss, very good athletically, great rebounder, which will come up with multiple of our draft picks, had quite a serious injury this year, syndesmosis. Apologies for the terrible pronunciation, but
no, I think you got it right that time.
Bad injuries, fought through it. Not really. He sort of, if you looked at a lot of the draft previews, he came at, it wasn't, some people when we first took it thought it was a reach, but actually a lot of people had him rated that sort of where we took him about in the upside of his range. It wasn't.
Cal Toomey had him at 18, for instance.
Exactly. And so, and the Rookie Me Draft Central, I think, had him between 20 and 30 as a pick. So pretty much bang on. I think the biggest surprise is we all expected us to take a midfielder, but he's obviously a very solid player. The lazy way to summarize it, and it's been in multiple press things, but it occurred to me as well, is that we've replaced Asprey and Hawley with our first two picks. I don't think that's entirely true, because Gibkiss is obviously a more rounded player than Dave, and Brown's also, well, we'll see, but Brown I think might be a more I'm not sure who. Yeah. Anyway, well, let's not get into too much of the Hawley comparison. But obviously, halfback rebounder can make people make people look like witches hats when he's running around them. So
it can
be exciting. Like many outside players, we might not see him very much in his first year, but a solid pick, and one where, and we've done this multiple times, people we've picked who weren't as highly rated by the non-professional draft experts, perhaps because they had interrupted seasons and weren't able to play as much.
A number of people have pointed out that this was Geelong's first round draft pick that we traded for last year, and with it we picked the son of a former Geelong player, Paul Brown, who apparently the Cats were very interested in. So that was fun.
Yeah, it is fun, and he's quite a Geelong-like player, and he's frequently compared to Tom Stewart. So,
and he's got the mullet that half the Geelong team had in the early 90s as well.
Anyway, he probably dodged the bullet, because I'm not sure I'd want to be drafted as a 17-year-old to Geelong right now, unless I actually lived on the Surf Coast. But we digress. Probably not either of us has preferred. Both of us went when we took him, but you can't, again, being humble. Yeah. Sorry, go.
You go.
I was just going, being humble and realizing you're dealing with incomplete information, you really can't critique the
no.
pick. Particularly when when we discuss the next pick.
Well, exactly. So something we haven't done, like I do up a list of players I sort of like and don't like relative to the rankings, and you know they're based on extremely incomplete information. But I think us and the entire world were not surprised when we picked. We're surprised that Tyler Sonsi was still available at our next pick at 28. And yeah, poor boy, is he a talented young man.
Absolutely. Have you noticed how many of our players have been in the pre-draft guide were compared to other Richmond players? So before they were drafted to us, and his comparison frequently, especially at the start of this year when he was one of the hottest of the hot prospects, was Trent Cotchin. And you can see it. You know, part of his upside is never fumbles, makes his clearances, really hurts with his clearances, which kind of describes a young Trent Cotchin when he had bursts to get away from the contest.
He was over 5 clearances a game. He had a really good 2019 when he came into the Eastern Rangers team as a 16-year-old. He was over 50% of his contested possessions rate, which is almost too high. It means you're not spreading from the contest enough, but he was even as a really skinny young kid, he was still winning his own ball, and he's very balanced. He's not as, you know, he's not as solid as young Trent Cotchin was. He's only 73 kilos, and look, all our guys are going to need to put on weight. Brown's only 77 kilos, and yeah, the other two we'll get to also need to put on weight. But he's an extremely balanced athlete, and having that quick twitch responsiveness in a contest is really nice, and he kicks really nice goals. Like he kicks them regularly, and they look great. Like there's a real polish about his work. We mentioned in the preview he had a fantastic game offensively for Box Hill in the VFL in his debut, but yeah, look,
for people who didn't listen, it was 25 touches and two goals.
Yeah. I think
including one from 55 that went through on the floor with a bit of meterage to spare.
Yeah. But you know, he came into the year as a potential top five pick, and he's ended at a mid second round pick. Like it clearly didn't go the way that he'd hoped. He had some injuries, a couple of different injuries, lack of continuity in his footy, and yeah, and the performances on the field weren't what people were hoping. Other than, you know, he did have some real flashes, but yeah, otherwise not what people had hoped.
Yeah, and because there was so much hype about him at the start of in the last off season, he's quite storied. Like there's a lot of information out there about him. I have heard apparently that we thought he was going to go at 20. So that the sort of, we can't believe he wasn't there at the pick. That's actually true. And he had been told by multiple clubs that didn't pick him in the 20s that they'd take him and then they'd decide to go somewhere else. So that bit's true. That game with Box Hill or another one of the sort of the stories going around is that Mitchell blasted him for his defensive effort during that defensive efforts during that game, which just sounds to me the kind of theatre that coaches go to when they're training a young player. But that is a knock on him, and that some of the draft experts have pointed out his defensive intensity is not as high as, say, Hobbs. Again, we're drafting someone at 27, so what do you expect? And there is also, you know, some of the media have mentioned, and Hawthorn actually, when they talked about why they didn't draft him, started talking about character straight away. So that's clearly there's a bit of, you know, there's a little bit of smoke about that. We of course have no independent verification of that, but it's out there public, so we're not giving away anything that's not out there. So the crappy Richmond comparison is Dan Connors.
I don't think it's a Dan Connors.
I'm a Nichols. It was a humorous reference. I don't really believe that. Just as like Tom Brown, the comparison would be Danny Meyer, a skillful outside flanker. Ooh. He was taken in the first round. It's a joke, Nick. It's all right. Relax. So I've got a good one I didn't come up with for Judson. So just hang on for that one. Look, he's really exciting. There's reasons why he dropped, but you're just getting such an A-grade upside talent that you just can't help but be excited.
And the questions on character, not at all that he's a bad kid, just, you know, that maybe he struggled with, you know, he'd finished school and with COVID just really struggled with focus and had a pretty tough year. And, you know, he's an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah, and you know what I'm thinking of when people say they struggled with the lockdown under COVID? You know the Drew Quick Carey line where he said, "Oh, you hate your job. There's a club for people like you. It's called Everyone. We meet at the bar." So you can't, you know, driven kid, maybe not perfect. You know, he's in such a different environment this year now. In the forthcoming year with Richmond than he would have been previously. And he had injuries, and injuries just suck when you're a young footballer. So there's so many reasons why at pick 27, Nick, by the way, the pick that we traded, that I was annoyed about, that we traded too much value away, this is the Collingwood pick. And there's no guarantee that we wouldn't have lost this, that, you know, someone at another club wouldn't have picked him. So maybe that trade was all right in the first time, because I'm because he's the kid that really makes this draft for me, because he's the upside.
Look, and Matt Clark in his interview said, when he was asked who was the most talented player of our group, he didn't say Gipkus. He went to Taylor Sonsi. And look, it's a real challenge for our coaching staff, which has done a great job developing players in recent years. It's been really hard the last 2 years with COVID and, you know, lack of VFL and a reduction in development staff. But yeah, this is the next big challenge for them. Well, I mean, they've got a whole group of clay to work with here. But you know, if Sonsi can max out his talent, it's going to be pretty special.
I do have one critique of him, Nick.
Mm.
I find his use of his wrong foot sort of unnecessary in third bogey.
Well, you are going to love Judson Clark.
I did rewatch his highlights at one point, because he did a brilliant left foot kick, and I had to rewatch the highlights to re-remember what was his preferred foot when he had a choice. So yes, he's extremely. I think he was described as the most two-sided player in the draft.
Mm.
So yeah, it'll be interesting whether he can hang on to that skill in the AFL, because very few players actually practically use both feet in the AFL. So, but he's maybe one of the rare people who can.
Mm. So next pick, as we mentioned, Sam Banks from Tasmania. He's actually the first player I can think of from the Tasmanian Midlands. Which is partly because hardly anybody, well, not that many people live there. They're sort of, it's a collection of very small towns. But he's been on the radar as an elite prospect for a long time. He captained the Tasmanian under-12s and has been captain. He's captained his age group every year. Since then, he debuted at state level at 15, he was on the radar as the best player from Division 2. So the more frontier, you know, New South Wales, Queensland, Tasmania, Northern Territory, he was the best player from those states at the under 16s. As with Sonsi, he had an injury interrupted year. He had a bad wrist injury, and when he played, it wasn't at the same standard. So, yeah, having come into the year very much on the radar as a top 20 pick, he's slipped a bit, and of all of our picks, he was the one that was. Probably a surprise that he was picked where he was relative to pre-draft rankings, but you know, he's a pretty great footballer in his own right.
Yeah, so some of the draft, a lot of the draft pick previews had him as a 30 plus pick. In fact, I don't think anyone had him under 30. But look, he's very much the one I'm most thinking of when I say. There's an insider-outsider information issue here, especially a Tasmanian kid who doesn't play much when he's under 18. Like, it's pretty hard for anyone outside. Professional recruiters have been watching him since he was 12 to really get a good handle on what he's going to be like. Interesting, probably the most interesting. So I think we just have to shrug and accept this one as an information issue.
He was still good. He played four NAB Cup games and was still good. He was over 20 disposals a game, and he was always.
And people know who he is, right? It's not, as you pointed out, he's captain of the team. It's not like they would have watched a lot of his football over the years. So it's not like we drafted a kid from Norfolk Island or something like that. It is interesting that the sort of the prioritization that we're showing here, we're sort of very, very solid intercept rebounder type player, not the brilliant athlete that Brown is.
Good athlete though. And
yes, again, solid, but
Again, nice size, 186 centimetres, 71 kilos. So he's going to need to put on some weight, although he's not skinny, but he needs some more bulk. It's clear, that he was always the apex of his team. Like his teammates would try and feed him to dispose of the ball, and you know he's got good run and carry. But yeah, I think again, it's someone who'd really like to get into our system, get some continuity in him, and see what he looks like in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, and like just not that different to Brett. Like in the nuance, he'll be different, but neither of them are. You know, thank God at least that we don't have to deal with 8 years of people speculating when they'll move into the midfield like Boston. They're not inside players, either of them. So, you know, they'll be flanks and pockets, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But both of them share. If you look at their draft rank, both of them are listed as inside games one of their primary weaknesses.
Whereas Sonzi, I don't know if he'd ever start a game in the centre square. Oh, maybe he could,
I'm more optimistic than that. Like just five clearances a game gives me hope that he's a mid forward rather than forward mid.
That's true, but yeah, he's certainly capable on that front. Shifter Sheehan loved Banks. It was quite endearing. So that's what you get when you've been watching these kids for a while.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, our last pick, Nick.
Yeah.
Quite an exciting player.
Yeah. Judson Clark, which I got to say, having Judd in his first name is always an unfortunate reference for me. But he's really exciting. He's small, 179 centimetres, 69 kilos. Like when I mentioned about when about 5 years ago we stopped, we started drafting more for speed and athleticism. We also started drafting smaller players than we had before. Like, you know, Liam Baker's, and first time I saw him, I thought he looked like a child, frankly. Like he was really short and skinny, and he's a really good footballer. Like we've just embraced that, you know, that sometimes that's what it takes. And yeah, Clark's under 70 kilos, which is small. He's going to have to put on weight for the tackles to stick. But oh, he's here, showman.
Yeah, so it's very much. Yeah, so the meta trend here is no surprise to anyone who watched the last three premierships is we've won a lot of games with guys who have sort of two golf clubs in their bags and they're very, very good at those things and they're not necessarily well-rounded. So the downside of being skinny is that you can't play inside and you don't have positional versatility, but that doesn't matter if your coach can put you in a position where you can use what you're good at to its absolute maximum. And Judson looks very Richmondy, Nick. He looks a lot like a more skillful version of George.
Ooh, different kind of player, but it's the image I had watching him was actually the little kid in the playground being chased by all the bullies who's faster than them all. Like he's so confident in his speed and just taking the game on. And his endurance numbers were good too. Not pretty close to top 20% at the combine testing. So he can very Richmondy. He can get up the ground and dash back, you know, as George does, as Dan Rioli does, as Dan Butler did. Like it's, yeah, there's a little bit of Shea Bolton in how he likes it. He doesn't mind trying for difficult goals.
No, that's true.
He kicks his share of them.
That five goals he kicked in the Vic Metro versus Vic Country game, the fifth one is just ridiculous. If you haven't seen it on the highlights, he takes a mark at about 45 and he just wheels round and runs around the guy on the mark and kicks it and just trusts his speed to get round. I heard, I wish I'd thought of this, but and thank you, LR, for the suggestion. Someone described him as if Robbie Powell was cloned and then upgraded into 2021.
Oh, that's very good. I like that one. Obviously, you approve of the fact that he only used seemingly every quick left-sided player since the dawn of time. He only uses his right leg for balance.
Yeah, and even in elite level juniors, you can see he's like a right footer can't run around like that because the players is just more instinctively aware of someone going on that arc. So yeah, like that trick won't work in the AFL. But yeah, he's just an absolute burner and legit good player in the sense that he's not just an athlete. You know, he kicked five goals in the best game he's played in. And apparently he wasn't very much on the radar screen before then. But, you know, after that, they couldn't stop him. And he's an incredible sort of, you know, all the cliches, upside. I guess it's not really X-factory because he's basically so quick that, you know, there's no surprise why he's good, if you know what I mean. There's not some mystery like the Bolton has, where he's not. Bolton has this sort of X factor where he has just brilliant in ways that you don't expect. Judson, you can see why he's brilliant.
The other thing with Bolton is, so when I researched vertical leaps in of Richmond players, you know, I'm that kind of person. In trying to find where Gibkiss ranked, the only one that was close was Shea Bolton. I'm not sure if Bolter tested, because I think his vertical leap's pretty impressive too. But Bolton's an extremely explosive athlete vertically as well, and Clark doesn't have that, but he's fun. He'll be good to watch. And yeah, it's funny thinking about the last 2 years that these kids have had. Like, I really hope when you get new draftees in, they're often careful with them because the AFL standard of running is so much higher. They sort of ease them in gradually. But I think these kids are just going to be so raring to go after the past 2 years just to be in a team environment and have that structure and have the guys around them. Like, you're going to have to hold them back.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a very... By the way, one of the comparisons for him was Dan Butler, which I don't mind at all.
No.
So they'll be absolutely raring to go. And, you know, one consistent theme about... not all of them, but on most of our draftees, that is they had either good form when they were younger, which is pretty much Stanford juniors, but most of them have clearly measurable, defined elite characteristics. So, in the athleticism department, which is something that's not affected by the amount of interruption. So, yeah, I think they're going to stand out when they get on the track. But I think overall, like I said, like we've sort of said, that the Sonzi thing, the one thing, you know, I probably would have liked one more mid, but when sort of we at least did get one really exciting one, and one who's, because that's what you really want, isn't it? You want a guy with upside. You don't want, like, Hobbs would have been fine and he probably would actually help you win next year, but you're always a bit concerned that how much is he always just going to be, you know, is he going to be Nathan Jones? And that's why he went in the teens. So
Nathan Jones has had a 300 game career, but yeah, in terms of upside, yeah, and there are so few elite tall prospects, like and it's so hard to get them, like MacAndrew and Sam Darcy went in the top five, but in terms of forward rucks, there was no. We're looking at trying to replace CCJ and Marbs on our list. there were no forward ruckmen picked between pick 5 and pick 50. There just weren't players available. So yeah, that it is a bit of a hole on the list, but it's partly because big players who can actually contribute at AFL level are really hard to come by at the moment.
Yeah, I actually commented to you. So I was a bit torn about how much we were drafting for need, and I said to you offline, "Is I really hope we don't take a forward ruck because it would have been a reach after our, and we didn't, and I'm 100% okay with that." And that's actually, Nick, a nice segue into, unless there's anything else you wanted to say about the draft, there was a
bit of housekeeping at the end of the clock. So seemingly in an eternity ago, we delisted both Noah Cumberland and Biggie Nguyen to get the number of spots we needed for our draft picks. We then consolidated our draft picks twice in the North Melbourne, in the trades with North Melbourne for Tarrant and for the Collingwood game. So we ended up not needing the pick for Cumberland, so we just put Cumberland back on the senior list. And then Biggie Nguyen, we redrafted with our first and only pick in the rookie draft.
Yeah, I thought that was actually interesting prioritisation. That I would have thought that almost Biggie would have had more value, but sure.
Cumberland had one really good VFL game towards the end of the year. So,
absolutely. And actually, and it wasn't a flash in the pan. After that game, he was well above average in output too. Certainly, I think, one or two more games. So, yeah, exciting. Cumberland is sort of... He's now fighting for a spot amongst a lot of good young talent. So, we'll see. But, yeah, not a huge surprise, but sort of... good that they got back on the list and we didn't lose them. I think we could have potentially at least lost Biggie, couldn't we?
Yeah, that was one I was slightly worried about. I mean, again, he's played so little football, so what you can tell. But yeah, there were positive reports about him from preseason last year, and yeah, it's great to have him back on the track. Interestingly, we had Garrett Madonna, who's 24-year-old out of our VFL program, was a third-round draft pick to Essendon. And even as someone who followed our VFL program pretty closely, like he was a good player, but yeah, he didn't particularly strike me as an AFL player, so I thought that was interesting.
Was it Essendon or Fremantle?
No, Essendon. Fremantle. In the preseason draft, in the rookie draft, Fremantle picked a kid, Carl Warner, who trained with us a bit, but never. So he was 19 years old, didn't get drafted last year, trained with us a bit, but never played with our VFL team and played with Oakley Chargers and was pretty good for them. So he got drafted to Fremantle. So yeah,
good for him.
It's a shame we're not picking them, but I mean, it's a good sign that we're getting players drafted out of our VFL program.
Yeah, absolutely, because it keeps people coming in, right? Because it appears to be, after last year as well, a semi proven pathway back into the AFL or into the AFL.
No, it's good. And Ryan Mansell upgraded to the senior list as well.
Yeah, not a huge slide price, but again, another just increasing the dominance and establishment of the slow takeover of Tasmanians in the Richmond list. You must be pleased.
Oh, I don't think it's a takeover. I think it's just a thing. For quite a while we've had strong links into Tasmania. So yeah, good to see it continue. There were a few other things I wanted to cover before we finished, but did you have anything else on the draft?
Well, I mean, I have nothing more on the draft, but there was a segue, as previously mentioned, where we lost two forward rucks and we didn't replace them. So this will shock you, Nick, but, you know, my mind has lovingly turned to our ruck stocks, and Samson Ryan obviously becomes more important. Now, it's not a forward ruck replacement, but it does throw into highlight what our sort of long term ruck stocks are like, because you always need a few going, because as magnificent as Nank looks in the preseason, as pointed out, he has missed 50% of game time, and I think at least the last 3 years. So
And Soldo's missed the whole of the last year.
You'll be surprised to think that I spent 60 seconds this morning when thinking about this podcast, getting quite emotional about the idea of seeing Soldo taking caps games.
Yeah,
but it does highlight Mate Kalina, who is actually, and this is the kind of exclusive Richmond Tiger Talk content you won't get elsewhere. But scored 25 points in the University of Hawaii game this week, and I think they're four games into the season. But yeah. But the good news is it's a bit of an outlier, so I don't think we have to worry about him.
No, and it feels bad.
To the NBA.
It feels bad wanting him not to be good at basketball so he can come back to football. But, yeah, that's where we are. He only scored 8 points in his other three games combined. So, yeah, I don't think the NBA is calling. But, yeah, it is a unique situation. He's the only basketball convert who's still playing basketball on the men's side. Like it's much more common among the women. I mean, we literally had Tessa Levy go to the Olympics, and Mon Conti's no joke either. So, but yeah, follow that with interest.
Yeah, he's actually only a junior, so technically he's got one more year of college eligibility if he wants to keep playing. But presumably at some time he'll graduate, and you suspect he's sort of just having a three-year gap year at University of Hawaii, enjoying life. So good on him. But yeah, it'll be a question for him whether he wants to have a hard crack at being a professional athlete, because the mail was from last year, as we discussed, that he does have some of the attributes of an AFL player.
Neil Barnes speaks very highly of him. He never played. He played practice scratch games, but he never played a VFL game. So yeah, he remains the great white whale. Andrew, they had you saw the presentation for the redevelopment of Punt Road during the week. What did you think?
Yeah, it was all very sensible and sort of, and I've spoken about this on the podcast before, and I tried to pick my words carefully because I don't like talking ill of the club, but I didn't particularly like the old plans. There were no plans, but I didn't particularly like the way they communicated, and I had a very uneasy feeling about it. And I actually went back because the stuff that came out recently, it looked really sensible, acknowledgement of history, sort of a good case put forward of why they did it. Yeah, it is a shame we're losing the stand. And, you know, on balance, I still, you know, it makes me very sad. But I went back and compared what they said this week and what they said a year ago, and it's just infinitely better now.
Oh, good.
So it's just what they said a year ago, no acknowledgement of history, no acknowledgement of the fans. It was a hodgepodge of worthy sounding things, but things that could be done anywhere with no particular link to Richmond. And now they've really sort of made it much more about the fans and the traditions, and they're calling it the Jack Dye Stand, which they didn't announce in the past. So yeah, it's really, the proposal really has come a long way, and at least they're acknowledging it. They're acknowledging the history. They still couldn't help themselves and put in the Jack Dye Stand has had many iterations. Yeah, has been there since 1914. You know, it's been renovated a few times. So it is actually a fairly historic building. So I get, you know, they put a good case and they're going to acknowledge it, and they're going to include some of the bricks in the new stand, and, you know, that we need to move on. And look, it's going to happen because after three premierships, they can basically do anything and people would vote for it. But my key point is they've come a really long way in their public messaging, and maybe they're always going to do that, but like it matters when you're like, football is not a rational pursuit. Where we're basically barracking for a culture, an idea, a jumper. and they're doing a far better job of acknowledging that now.
Yeah, and I do think at the moment, as much as we like watching games at Punt Road, it does. There's a bit of choose your own adventure about every time you go there. You know, it's unclear about what facilities they're going to have for spectators, and you know which parts of the ground are going to be open. So I think, you know, having redesigning it, setting up it, you know, designed to have this many people watching VFL games, watching AFLW games, like it's and you know obviously hoping to grow those crowds over time, particularly for the women. But you know, you've got a chance to you know respect that history, but design a really up to date venue that's great for spectators. So I think that's a real opportunity because yeah, while we'll deeply miss the old stand, absolutely nobody will miss the black and gold building next to it, and I say that as a Morris Rioli club member.
Yeah, fair enough. And there is a big shortfall, so I sort of wonder whether it will be built sequentially. And I think the priority will be the bits that are more about the club administration and the sort of the long term plans to improve the outer might be sort of second, third generation things. Which, frankly, I don't mind the grass outer quite. And, you know, things will evolve, of course, but what crowd, how big a crowd do we need to accommodate at Punt Road for VFL and AFLW games? I don't know. It's a medium-term question. Maybe these things will keep growing, but we still have the MCG there for overflow for big games. But, yeah, look, you've got to, and I've heard Benny, so I didn't listen to Benny's presentation, but I've heard him say this in other places. You know, I love the old stand, and like in fairness, he did used to lift weights there. He trained in there. You know, that these are not people who are outsiders. They understand the history of the club. So
yeah, he's spent most of his adult life around that stand.
Yeah, he does have a good theory that being in Richmond is perhaps one of the things that saved the club, which is a theory that it definitely has some merit. Yeah, so that was it was definitely a big improvement, which was nice. Is there anything else on the Richmond front that you wanted to raise?
No, look, the last thing to mention, and unfortunately it's a sad one, but a guy called Ron Murray, who's sort of better known to many as Lee to Rains to Roach from some of the big Richmond forums, who was a real fixture on those forums and a statistics guru, sadly passed away recently. And look, I didn't know him personally. I sort of messaged him a few times, and he was always helpful, very very private. He turned down an invitation to come on the show, but he was always extremely, helped me out with stats a few times. And I think, you know, I always enjoyed reading him. I think he had 33,000 posts on different Richmond forums. Somebody counted. So yeah, he was a real fixture in the online community, and very sad news. So best wishes to people who knew him well and his family.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I always really enjoyed his. I love people who love the club but can find something unique to say. And gee, he was good at coming out a clever little stat that made Richmond look good. One of my favourite things, especially when we were young and crap, you know, he'd be great at putting out average age stats, which are incredibly important and underrated. But he was a great soothing balm for supporters of bad clubs like we were when we were on the come up. So yes, rest in peace.
Also, that's. I'd already clicked over to December. isn't quite December yet. I'm not sure when we'll do our next show. It'll sort of be, I think it'll be a question of just how much Richmond news accumulates over as we head into pre-season. Sadly, we don't have a start date for the AFLW yet, but hopefully that that gets going in January, yeah, and we can head into another footy year.
Yeah, I think we'll come back for an AFLW season preview show, I would imagine, and looking forward to that. But otherwise, it's draft show is always one of my favourites, and looking forward to the next one.
Is it? Always feel a little bit empty afterwards. What do I do now?
It's definitely the day. It's definitely Boxing Day without the cricket match.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Coming to slow. He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers.